Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for December 17, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. In agricultural news, a California lawmaker is calling for a one-year extension of tax incentives for the development of advanced biofuels. We'll have that and other stories. Also this half hour, Todd Gleason will talk to University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good about corn and soybean prices from this week's FarmDoc Agricultural Summit meetings. And Don Day will have agricultural weather. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
For more protection against bad weather hitting your crops, Hendricks Insurance Services offers Total Weather Insurance, a full-season program designed to pay out automatically when bad weather hits. Learn more from Luke Hendricks at Hendricks Insurance Services at 815-844-6729 or 815-383-6209.
Let's go ahead and see how futures settled on this Tuesday afternoon. May hard red winter wheat settled at 663 3/4, down 5. July 663, down 4 1/2. May wheat 626, down 1 3/4. July 627 1/2, down 1 3/4. March corn 426 3/4, up 3 1/2. July 442, up 3 3/4. January soybeans 1346 1/2, up 8 3/4. July 1304 1/4, up 9 1/4. January soybean meal 448, up $9. It was as high today as 449.30. That is a contract high. January soybean oil 39.31, down 44. December live cattle 131.70, down 30. January feeders 167.17 1/2, down 122 1/2, and February lean hogs 85.57 1/2, down 105.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Lerner's weather highlights, he says that Brazil weather over the coming week will include net drying in the south from Rio Grande do Sul through Paraguay to Paraná and southern Mato Grosso do Sul, while waves of rain, some quite heavy, move through the remainder of the nation's crop areas. Some local flooding will be possible in northern Brazil, with rainfall of 3 to more than 8 inches possible by this time next week. Rain is advertised in some of the drier areas of Argentina, southern Brazil, Paraguay, and Uruguay, beginning the second half of next week and continuing into the following weekend. The precipitation will offer a temporary reprieve from the hot, dry conditions, but the improved weather may be short-lived. The bottom line for South America includes a net drying bias in central and northeastern Argentina, southern Paraguay, Uruguay, and southern Brazil.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Your You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Oh, good afternoon, Dave.
Among traders of a certain vintage, I don't like to say old, but experienced traders, they often say that meal is the real deal, and as soy meal goes, so does beans. If that is true, soybeans may be in for quite a ride.
You know, Dave, I mean, meal is the strength of the bean market and what does really support it. And, of course, we saw that again today, the meal up sharply. And, of course, then we pulled beans from being negative when we walked in this morning to closing up about 9.5 cents here this afternoon, at times, you know, as high as, 13, 14 higher. So it is out there. It is backing this market. And we are sort of seeing a little bit of a, you know, holiday rally here.
Can you squint your eyes at a January soy meal chart and make a case for 464?
You know, as we look at that, that is possible. And I'll tell you what, I mean, you know, there are chart followers here now, and in a thinner holiday market, they're going to go to technical points, and it looks like, you know, it's possible.
And if we do see 464 in soybean meal, what does that mean for the January soybean chart?
Well, it means that we're probably going to pull it on up through that 1350 mark and, you know, go on to our next little mark up there, which is probably in the 1370 bracket. So, you know, there is a possibility of possibly a 20, 25-cent rally in here if we just look at the technical terms.
Are there any underlying fundamental reasons that would support a technical move like that?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things. Of course, China's sort of been out of the bean market for a little while here. We are continuing to very rapidly ship the contracts we have. But if they would step back into the cash market would be one big thing. The crush margin for the U.S. Processors, it's been harder to buy beans with all of them being going to the Gulf to be shipped out. So they're keeping the basis level fairly good that way. And if you haven't noticed, we've seen a little bit of colder weather, which generally is a little more demand for meal here, just domestically as far as the way it goes, Dave.
Turn your attention to the corn market. Your thoughts there?
Well, the corn, you know, the bean market pulled the corn market up a little bit here. We did go down and sort of, you know, test some of the lower bounce-off methods as far as that goes, too. We have an extremely short position by the funds. We're seeing some short covering coming into the holidays there. And we also were talking an awful lot about fund managers rebalancing for the new year. And with them being so extremely short, we could see a little bit of buying to do their rebalancing act that way. We've also seen that the cash basis as far as in central Iowa increased about 8 cents overnight, trying to draw some corn out of farmers' hands at these lower levels where they're pretty tight holders for the ethanol plants, because the ethanol plants are continuing to crush pretty heavily and going on. It's sort of hard to get a supply of corn in some areas.
When you add all of those fundamentals up and put a time window of the next week to 10 days of trade, do you think that we might try another summit around the 442?
You know, it's possible. I think if we go up to that level, I think that we will see some farmer movement. I do think that we'll see some sales anyhow. And I think that we will run into some resistance up there as far as the corn goes. Because like it or not, Dave, everybody knows we've really got an awfully good supply of corn.
What about the basis side? Basis still has not fallen out of bed. What are your thoughts regarding basis in terms of farmer selling?
Well, I think that, you know, there's many thoughts along the way. One of them is that a lot of the farmers are waiting until next year to make cash sales because of tax problems that they had for the income in this year. Others are just a little stubborn because the price is so low. But I do think that, in all honesty, if they haven't sold much corn out, that they should be looking at these basis levels right now. And selling and taking advantage of some of those, because after the first of the year and when we see some of the farmers open their bins and it's readily available, I'm afraid that we might go up on the board, but we might fall back off just as much in the basis as we go that way. So if you want to keep it open, sell a little bit of cash, move a little grain, core those bins, and buy a callback.
And a quick comment about wheat before we let you go on the day.
Please. Wheat, you know, we've got into the area here. I think that if corn and beans will stabilize here, I think that wheat's going to find some stabilization.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and he is in New Market, Indiana.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
In agricultural news, the U.S. ethanol industry is making a pitch to extend a trio of tax credits that provide incentive to produce second-generation biofuels, including at plants under construction in Iowa and Kansas. The second-generation biofuel producer tax credit, the second-generation biofuel plant depreciation allowance, and the alternative fuel vehicle refueling property credit are set to expire on December 31st. Freshman Representative Scott Peters, a Democrat from California, introduced the Second Generation Biofuels Extension Act of 2013, which would provide a one-year extension of the credits and incentives. The Renewable Fuels Association is applauding the introduction of the bill. RFA President and CEO Bob Dineen says Peters understands the need for Americans to have access to a renewable, low-cost alternative to gasoline. Dineen says investors need certainty, and extending the tax credits for second-generation biofuels will boost investment and innovation in cellulosic and advanced biofuels. Scientists with USDA are stepping up their efforts to help fight swine viruses that are prevalent in other countries and pose a threat to the United States. A microbiologist with USDA's Agricultural Research Service is developing vaccines, diagnostic tests, and other strategies to help control classic swine fever. The disease, eradicated in the U.S., is present in wild boars in Europe, where it can infect domestic pigs. About 1,550 acres of Crawford County, Illinois land sold for $8.2 million at auction. The land, offered in eight tracts, ranged from 36 acres to 373 acres and sold to seven successful bidders, almost entirely in individual tracts. The auction attracted a crowd of more than 200 people with 61 registered bidders who competed for an hour and 45 minutes. USDA sold the last of its sugar inventory to domestic ethanol makers, bringing down the total cost of last season's sugar program to about $259.1 million. USDA had received the sugar after processors defaulted on federal government loans at the end of September. The sale was the fourth this year under a program outlined in the 2008 Farm Bill that aims to boost prices for the sweetener. And that is a look at today's agricultural news.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason from the 2013 Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Daryl Good, ag economist from the U of I, joins us to take up his subject matter, which, of course, is always the price of commodities. Daryl, as you look forward into the 2014 year, both for old and new crop, how would you summarize each of them and their prospects at this time?
Well, I think for corn, we probably see some weakness in both old and new crop corn prices at this point. In general, weakness is coming from the large U.S. crop in 2013, the buildup in inventories that is occurring, and I think that's going to keep some continued pressure on corn prices with, I think, a lot of inventory in the country yet to move to market. New crop is a little more uncertain because it's going to be dominated by the size of the U.S. crop, which obviously we don't know at this point, but if we do have another large crop in 2014, which seems to be a reasonable expectation, then we see a further buildup in inventories next year, and I think perhaps some continued pressure on corn prices that while the market is now offering higher prices for the 2014 crop, it's logical to think that we could turn out to be a bit lower than what we are this year. So just don't see the opportunity for a lot of strength in the corn market at this point. Having said that, you always have to hedge based on weather and production, and we won't know that for several months.
During your presentation, which, by the way, can be found on the FarmDoc website, there should be FarmDoc and FarmDoc Daily links to the IFAS, or Illinois Farm Economic Summit, presentations. You showed a slide that took up exports and how quickly those have come back. In the previous eras where we had a large run-up in prices, that would have been the 1970s, and whether or not they managed to increase at that point. Of course, those export markets were developed in the 1970s, but it's kind of an idea of the commodity prices jumped up and how quickly do they come back when new farmland comes on from around the planet to fill the gap.
Well, I think what we saw in the 70s and again in this most recent era of higher prices is that the world does respond production-wise, and we have seen nearly a 50% increase in corn production outside of the United States since 2005. Some of that production is in countries that are net importers. Some of it is in countries that are net exporters like the Ukraine and Brazil. And so on net, we have seen a substantial increase in corn exports from countries other than the U.S. over the last 5 or 6 years. And to a large extent, that's come at the expense of U.S. corn exports because we've been pretty high priced. Now we're more competitive. We'll see our corn exports rebound somewhat, but we don't expect that we'll get back to where we were, say, to that 2 billion bushel mark anytime soon.
In that case, it appears that the export market or potential for the export market to increase very much is not very high. There are other uses, of course, for corn domestically. RFS is one of those, or ethanol production. Although in Washington, D.C., there is a great deal of indecision at this point about the policies that are related to that. Under the U.S. EPA's proposal at this time, do you suppose usage would change very much, at least for the 2014 growing season?
You know, if we end up with something close to the tentative rulemaking by EPA, I think we would see corn used for ethanol come in for this current marketing year somewhere close to 5 billion bushels. And so depending on where they end up, and we may not know that until March, we could be a couple hundred million bushels either way of that. So it's going to be a big number that we'll use for ethanol again this year, it may be in a range above or below what we're thinking right now, but probably not enough to change the overall supply-demand balance for corn.
Any expectation that feed usage would change very much?
We do expect more corn to be fed. We're seeing some expansion in livestock numbers. Lower prices of feed will encourage more consumption. And I think as we get into next summer, we'll find that corn is now once again more competitive with wheat and many of the livestock rations. So that's something that may unfold slowly as we go through the year, but we should see bigger numbers revealed in each of the quarterly stocks numbers as we go forward.
When you look at the price of corn over time as a comparison, and you adjust for new plateaus, are we at this point at a high price, a low price, a new midpoint price?
You know, right now I'd say we're probably at an average to slightly below average price for what we would expect during the new era that we think began in about 2007 that coincides with the buildup in ethanol use of corn. You know, we've been thinking $4.50 is probably the new $2.50 corn that we experienced prior to 2006, 2007. So depending on where you are geographically, corn prices are right in that range right now, $4 to $4.25 in many of the cash markets. So I think we're right there at a long-term average.
Any reason to believe that acreage will change very much in the coming year?
Well, we hear a lot of different anecdotal reports about acreage. You know, we start with the idea that there was a lot of unplanted acres in 2013, so that under normal conditions, total crop acreage should go up next year. And then the question for many of us here in Illinois is, how will that be divided between corn and soybeans? And beginning to hear a few more reports of farmers thinking they will plant fewer corn, more soybean acres next year. It's really hard to gauge the magnitude of that based on just anecdotal reports, but certainly new crop soybean prices are becoming more competitive and we would think would attract a few more soybean acres.
For old crop corn, old crop soybeans, pricing structure, and then for new crop as well?
Yeah, I mean, it just to me looks like for corn, we're in a very flat price pattern that has persisted for a couple months now, and I wouldn't be surprised for that to happen, you know, for the next couple of months. We started looking for something that could surprise the market, and you really wonder if there's anything before spring that could surprise the market and bring about higher prices. So I look for a very flat price pattern on old crop corn. And you would have to think maybe very similar on new crop as well until we get more information about acreage. But I think eventually maybe there is some potential for some weakness in new crop corn if it turns out we're on track for another big crop next year. Soybeans, you know, it's difficult to think of magnitudes, but I think the general direction is weaker prices, particularly on old crop soybeans, as we figure out that we've got this tight supply rationed, South American crop comes on. I think there's room for old crop beans to go down from here. New crop beans are already lower priced, so maybe at least in a short run, not much downside risk. But if we get more acres and a good yield, we'll see lower prices by harvest time.
Darrell, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
Darrell Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois. By the way, Darrell and Gary Schnicke, both ag economists from the U of I, will join me the evening of January the 24th for our second annual Voices of Illinois Agriculture event. It's a fundraiser. Our keynote speaker this year, the president of the University of Illinois, the land-grant university, animal scientist Bob Easter. If you'd like to register for that event, registration is open. Just search Google for Voices of Illinois Agriculture. It's a great evening to be held right here on this campus. You can find all the details online. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
It's National Maple Syrup Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1843, Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol was published. In 1857, Sir Francis Beaufort died. He invented the wind force scale. Officially adopted by the British Admiralty in 1838, it used numbers 0 to 12 to designate calm, light air, light breeze, gentle breeze, moderate breeze, fresh breeze, moderate gale, fresh gale, strong gale, whole gale, storm, and hurricane. In 1870, Bert Benjamin was born. An American inventor, He is responsible for the Farmall tractor and the power takeoff system on agricultural tractors. The Farmall was the first tractor that could plow and cultivate row crops. Benjamin, a graduate from Iowa State College, held 140 patents, ranging from a corn picker to a corn shredder to a corn binder. He spent nearly 40 years with the International Harvester Company. In 1892, George Brayton died. An American engineer, he invented the first commercial gas internal combustion engine. In 1903, powered human flight was achieved by the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. And in 1940, corn silk was recorded by Guy Lombardo and his Royal Canadians. And that's this day in agricultural history. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
It seems as though there is the beginnings of a story to tell down in South America, particularly Argentina, as it relates to dryness.
Well, yes, this is something that we started the season down there a little bit dry. They had a good period of weather a couple weeks ago. But right now, the outlook for Argentina is dry, especially in the short term. Now, longer term, as we peek into just after the new year, there might be some better opportunities for Argentina to get some rain. But until then, only areas to the north, up into Brazil, and those areas have the better chance of rain.
Parts of southern Brazil also are dry, though, too, right?
Yeah, right down there where Brazil gets closer to Argentina, conditions there are drier as well. Although they have a better opportunity in that, right around that time frame of the new year, that southern Brazil area, I think, is in better position to get some rain.
That would be Paraguay, Uruguay, those kind of places.
Exactly.
Turn your attention to closer to home. What is your outlook over the week to 10 days in the Corn Belt?
Well, it looks very wintry. We're going to be looking at a couple of systems coming in, and these systems are going to have the opportunity to produce some precipitation as well as some colder weather. Although temperatures are going to be rebounding in the short term as we get ourselves into the end of the week, Thursday night into Friday, we see some areas of light rain, then snow moving in, and then we see a system coming up out of the south. That's going to spread some rain, snow, and ice into many areas of the Corn Belt, especially the central and southern Corn Belt, as you get focused more towards the Ohio Valley as we get into the weekend. The weekend storm is something, Dave, that we'll need to keep an eye on, especially for Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio.
Is it my imagination, or have we started out with a wet winter?
We have, and a cold one. Right now, if you were to look at the lower 48 states as a whole, since December 1, the temperature across the lower 48 has averaged 3 degrees Celsius below normal. That's pretty significant. And with that has been plenty of weather to go along with it.
You see that trend continuing.
Well, that's a real big debate right now in the weather field, is whether or not the trends we have seen in December will carry forward into January. I'm leaning towards that. Looking at least for the first half of January, the opportunity for more cold shots and more snow events looks pretty good.
What are some of the things that you look at that make you feel that way?
Well, right now, water temperatures in the Pacific, they are a lot different than they were last year, and it's not only important what those water temperatures are doing, but where they're warmer. And where they're warmer is up in the Gulf of Alaska. And when that happens, it tends to have high pressure in the Pacific, the Northeast Pacific. That allows the door to Canada to be open more often than not. Last year, we had an opposite situation.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
That's Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And that is today's closing market report. Remember, you can subscribe to our free Ag e-newsletter. You can do that at willag.org. That's willag.org. Click on the subscribe link in the right navigation window. This is Dave Dickey.